What's up, Korekara Squad? Welcome back to the podcast. This week we have the one and only Tokini Andy on the podcast, and we get into how he got good at Japanese, some of his experiences with burnout, and some funny stories altogether. If you guys want to support the podcast, be sure to check out the YouTube version of the podcast and smash the like button. We also recently started a book club on our Patreon where we're going to be reading Welcome to the NHK. It's open to all Japanese levels and we have bi-weekly discussions. So if you're interested, definitely come through. Really helps the podcast altogether. But as always, hope you guys enjoy the podcast.
Andy, so can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
Sure. So my name is Andy. I've lived in Japan since 2012, except for like 1 year where I was living in New Zealand. And I just came here for a year, sort of. I was coming here for a year to sort of make some money, and then I was going to go off and travel some other places. But I sort of fell in love with the country within a couple months and realized I was going to be here a little bit longer than that. So I was like, I should probably learn some of the language, because if I'm going to stay here more than 1 year and I can't speak any Japanese by the end, like, what a waste that would be. So I sort of have this tendency to go really hardcore with whatever I get interested in, probably too much so, to where I'll do something really, really hard and then lose interest. But with Japanese, I sort of found my little niche, and I went really hard for about 2 years, just like 4 or 5 hours a day, sometimes more if I didn't have anything to do, of just studying and practicing and learning Japanese. And yeah, I've lived here for about 9 years, and then just about 2 years ago, I got into YouTube, and I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, and someone asked me a question about Lesson 3 in the textbook Genki, which is where they first introduce verb conjugation. And I went back and I read Genki because I had a copy of it, that lesson, and it was so bad. Like, I tried to read it, and I didn't understand
it. Is that
the
T-form?
No, it's mas. It's just the mas conjugation. Oh. Super easy. Like, if you know how to do it, super easy. But the way it was explained was just like, I'm confused now. Like, I don't know what's going on. So I was like, I'm gonna make a video explaining it. And I was really bad on camera in the beginning when I first started YouTube. So I decided to start live streaming. I was like, well, if I'm gonna explain this anyway, I might as well just go from the beginning and live stream a little bit. So I started live streaming, and that lesson 3 video did really well. And my channel started growing a little bit, and I was like, I guess I'm the Genki guy now. So I'm the Genki guy. If you search for Genki on YouTube, you're gonna see my face.
Genki disco.
Genki disco, y'all. So yeah, that's me.
Yeah, so yeah, I'm really interested in that really hardcore phase that you talked about in the first 2 years. Like, so you said you did a lot of studying, so I'm assuming like textbooks. But did you do it?
No.
Stuff like Anki or like shadowing, stuff like that.
Yes. So let's see. Before I came to Japan, I was kind of interested in the language learning. I hadn't really done any yet, but I was really interested in... You ever heard of the guy that did the Fluent in 3 Months blog back in the day? What's his name again?
Benny Lewis.
Yes, yeah. Benny Lewis, right. Yeah. Dude, I loved his blog back in the day when I was like 22, 23. That's when he was just starting to get big. And, you know, obviously the whole Fluent in 3 Months thing is sort of like... You can't really get super fluent in 3 months, but just the idea of like... throwing yourself into the culture and into the world in that country and going all in really appealed to me. So I sort of used his approaches a lot. And of course, he was big on Anki, I think. I can't remember for sure. But I did RTK, and I quit using English basically from like the second or third month. So I started with like, I'd do a day from like the very beginning, my very first day learning Japanese. I just quit English for the day. And I would just look up everything I wanted to say, which was very tedious, man. That was a rough day. But anyway, on my third month, I just quit speaking English altogether for a whole month, even to people who spoke English. And yeah, I quit listening to English, so I was only listening to Japanese music. I quit watching videos in English. I was only watching Japanese. Basically, like, immersion, but before I knew what immersion was, like before the whole AJAT and things, like, there was immersion, but that was just sort of going to the country and living there was what people considered immersion. And that whole, right. You know, MAT and AJAT has sort of taken the immersion term and, you know, sort of coined it for their sort of media consumption type of thing, which is really cool. But I did that too as well as sort of just talking to lots of Japanese people in Japan as much as I could. So I'd watch, you know, I'd watch anime or whatever, watch TV in Japanese, and I took iTalki lessons a lot. So I was doing Skype lessons. You had my teacher on your podcast recently.
Oh, really?
Annie. Was it Annie? I did. I was doing lessons with her every single day for like a couple months. She's awesome.
That's amazing.
So I was not interested in textbooks at all. I did not touch any textbooks. I bought the you can probably see it in the background. It's the dictionary, the grammar dictionaries. And I just through that, and I'd pick one and I'd make a bunch of sentences, and then I'd call Annie on Skype, and we'd go through my sentences, and she'd be like, "No, that's terrible. No, that's terrible. That's terrible." And she'd be like, "You should say it like this," and it, you know, just destroyed my confidence but helped me understand grammar a lot better, which is why I think I'm able to explain it, because I didn't do the textbooks in the beginning. I was just going through the grammar.
Right.
And then I decided to take the JLPT after about a year, just because I was losing interest. So I needed a sort of something to motivate me. And that's when I first started doing some textbook stuff. Annie was like, "Okay, if you're going to take the JLPT, we need to find a structure." So she pulled out Genki 2, and we started in the middle. So my first experience with textbooks really was the middle of Genki 2 to the end, all the like honorifics and stuff. That was fun. Honorifics. I'm still bad at honorifics. But anyway, yeah. So lots of immersion, lots of speaking. On the weekends, I'd just go out with my friends and try and talk to random Japanese people and stuff. And I started working in a bar in the middle of that. So after about a year and a half of studying, I found this Okinawan restaurant in my town. And the owner was really nice. And I was joking. I was like, "I want to work here." He's like, "Okay, come in next weekend." Okay. So I started working there on weekends after work. I'd work like 9 hours at my Eikaiwa job at the time. Then I'd bike into town 11 kilometers. And then I'd work till 3 in the morning at the bar just so that I could speak Japanese with the customers and stuff and learn how to make drinks. That was fun. Wow. I learned a lot.
So did you make a lot of like mistakes that you had to fix later on, because you were like trying to output from the very beginning?
I still make mistakes. I mean, making mistakes was sort of, I mean, if you know the Benny Lewis type of thing, his whole thing was make mistakes every day and try to make a bunch. Yeah. And I was totally into that. So yeah, I made tons of mistakes, but I tried to go out of my way to ask people, at least who are close to me, to correct me. And of course they don't all the time, but if I reacted kindly when they did correct me, they were more likely to correct me again. And doing the lessons a lot and asking like Annie, and I did have some other teachers, but like, "I'm going to speak all in Japanese. I want you to explain everything in Japanese." I never let my teachers speak English to me. I was like, no English from day one. I was like, even if I don't understand it, I think they hated me. They probably hated me because I was just like, "You have to do it in Japanese." I'm such a dick. But yeah, so I definitely made mistakes. And there's definitely things even now like that I could correct. But by the end of 6 to 8 months, and definitely a year, like I could talk to people without a dictionary and at least explain myself, like explain words that I didn't know using other words. So like my goal was never to be perfect at Japanese, because I didn't even expect to be here that long. I just wanted to communicate with the people around me. And once again, I had no idea what this whole immersion thing was. I didn't know what pitch accent was. I didn't know about any of that stuff. So I just sort of threw myself into it. And but I think from now, actually, now that like this is my job, basically, I probably will spend more time over the next couple of years or the next year or so trying to correct some of my mistakes, because I definitely make mistakes all the time. My pitch accent is probably garbage. I mean, it's not terrible, but I could improve.
Yeah. I see. So basically, after that 2 year period where you went really hardcore, would you say that you were like completely fluent in the language?
Not completely. So here's the thing. If I was talking with someone one-on-one, yes. But the difficult thing with a second language is when you're talking with a group of people who are all natives. So when they're talking to each other and trying to like get into the conversation, that's where I was still struggling after 2 years. So after 2 years, one-on-one, no problem. I did job interviews in Japanese, no problem. I actually got a job just based on being able to do the interview in Japanese, even though they had a translator. So I got that job, and it was at a kindergarten. I was just a homeroom teacher for this immersion class. So I don't know if you guys know about the, you probably do, but your listeners might not. So the school system in Japan, generally speaking, you have homerooms. So like all the kids in a grade are divided into different homerooms, and the teachers go to each room to teach their subjects, and they don't move from the room, generally speaking, right? And that's true in kindergarten as well, which is from 3 to 5 year olds. So I had my own room, and my kids all, they didn't speak English. I spoke English to them all day, every day, these 4 to 5 year olds. And except for like when they needed discipline and stuff, like you can't discipline a kid who doesn't speak English in English, because they're not gonna know what you're talking about. They're just gonna laugh in your face and be like, ha, 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 that's funny. So like then I'd have to speak Japanese. But all the other teachers there didn't speak English. So I had to use English every day at work. Japanese every day at work. All the documentation and stuff every day was in Japanese. I had to write reports by hand every single day, like a page of what happened during the day in Japanese. So that's when I really started leveling up, because we'd have meetings like two or three times a week that were all in Japanese, and I actually had to participate and like, you know, give feedback and stuff. So that's when I started being able to speak to other, like to get involved in conversations in groups of Japanese people. And that's when I started to consider myself like really fluent, because I could read, I could write, and I could speak to Japanese groups of people while they were talking to each other. Because that was the hardest part for me before I got that job, was like I felt really, really good. I'd be talking to one person Japanese, and then two other Japanese people would come in and they'd start talking to each other, and I'd just be sitting there like, I know what you're saying and I know what I want to say, but you're already on the next subject. So like that was really hard in the beginning. But yeah, so I would say where I considered myself fluent was after about 3 years, right?
I see. Yeah, that seems like pretty in line with like a lot of people I interview. Like, it's like the 3 year mark is like a pivotal moment.
Yes.
Did you take the like the JLPT?
I did in my first year. My first year, I took the JLPT 3, and I passed that no problem. And then I stopped studying. To be honest, I guess that. Yeah, no, that was my first year. I studied for another year, and then I just stopped studying because I was just literally immersed in it every single day at work.
Right.
So I didn't really study anymore. But yeah, I took the JLPT 3 in N3 in my first year, I think, right after my first year. Yeah.
I see. Do you have any interest of ever getting the N1?
I should, just because, once again, because I teach it, I feel like it would be good to at least prove that like I can do it. Which it's not a big deal, because I don't think most people care, but I am interested to do the challenge, so I probably will do it at some point. The issue is, right, so the JLPT one has a lot of like, there's a lot of stuff that's useful that you'll use in conversation, but a lot of it is very formal stuff that's more like newspaper Japanese and things like that, and I don't really like newspapers. I'm not that interested in them. But I need to read a lot of newspapers just to make sure I could actually pass it well. And because I spend so much time making content, like so much time, until I sort of get into a situation where I'm at least done with the textbook stuff and I'm just making shorter videos every week, it's hard to find my like time for myself to study more. So until I can find some of that time, I probably won't take it. But maybe the end of next year, I'll go ahead and do it. We'll see. Yeah.
And I think another interesting thing is, I mean, you always see Anki being brought up when it comes to Japanese learning. And I mean, you've done Anki as well. But so I guess kind of going along those lines, what would you say your experience with Anki has been throughout your experience learning Japanese?
If I didn't have Anki, I never would have gotten anywhere near where I was. In those 2-3 years that I was going hard, the 2 years I was going really hard, I most of my time was spent, at least half of it was on Anki. So, you know, doing kanji and Anki. I was doing RTK at the time and doing vocabulary. And what I did is I actually took every single example sentence from the grammar dictionaries and I put them into an Anki deck, and I was using those to go through every single one. Wow. So I was spending 2 to 3 hours
a day on Anki. I think there's like
I think it was just the first and maybe the second book that I put in there. It took a long time to make the deck, and I lost it. I don't know what happened to it.
Oh, man. No.
What a waste. Oh, my God. So that was huge. Like, Anki was a huge factor. And I think for, like, someone starting out, it's basically a requirement nowadays, or something similar to it. Like, having SRS is just too powerful of a tool to, like, sleep on. After you get to, like, a more advanced level, I feel like it can start to become somewhat of an impediment, depending on how much time you have. So, like, if you have a ton of free time, great, keep doing it. If you only have, like, 2 hours a day, for example, to study, and you have a choice between, at a high level, right? And you have a choice between reading for 2 hours and doing Anki for 2 hours, I feel like, I'm not 100% on this yet, but I'm more and more, especially the past year or so, I've been starting to feel like you'd be better off spending those 2 hours reading than catching up on your Anki cards at a higher level, right? For someone who's just starting out or is in their first year or something, keep grinding the Anki. It's useful.
And I guess kind of now going in a completely different angle, this is just one topic that continually just comes up when we're on talking to people on the podcast. And it's the whole idea of a Japanese girlfriend or a Japanese wife. And it, time and time again, everyone in the comments
is the key to fluency.
The key to fluency.
It's pretty damn close to being the key. It's pretty close. It's hard to... So, like, think about it, right? Unless you have, like, a really, really good friend that you hang out with all the time, or, like, a coworker that speaks only Japanese, your other options are, like, finding people online to talk to, I guess, or, like, going out to the bar, but you can't... You're not going to spend 8 hours a day at the bar, because that's not going to work out too well for you. And you most people probably don't have enough money to spend, you know... spend on hours of lessons every day and
iTalki.
So, like, imagine that, 8 hours and iTalki. Oh my god, I'd be exhausted and broke. And so, like, what's the next best thing? A significant other that speaks
HelloTalk.
I guess there's that, right?
But yeah, we don't talk about HelloTalk over here.
Dating, is pretty awesome because, you know, text messaging, phone calls, being with them all the time whenever you're out of work. If you work with them too, I mean, well, that's just constant opportunities to speak. So yeah, it's hard to deny the benefit of dating someone who speaks your target language. I mean, I don't even know if it's debatable. It's obviously a huge factor. If I had dated, for example, an American while I was living in Japan instead of a Japanese person, I can't imagine my Japanese would be nearly as good as it is now, just because, obviously, like, why? I know a bunch of people, actually, who dated people from their own countries or from other English-speaking countries, and they still can't really speak Japanese, obviously, right? Like, why would they even bother? I mean, nothing wrong with that. I mean, if you really like someone who happens to not speak Japanese, like, okay. And I do not recommend dating someone just to learn a language, because that's a dick move.
Yeah.
Like, I've been dated by people who just wanted to learn English. You know what I mean? Like, I've had the reverse before. And it's not cool. Like, it doesn't feel great. I mean, in the beginning, it's fine. Like, I don't care. Like, you want to learn English, you're cool. But long term, you know, it's sort of draining. So if you like someone and they happen to speak your target language as well, don't even go for it, man. It's awesome.
Right. So does that mean, Andy, you've been a prime target of the gaijin hunters?
Not a prime target, but on a long enough timeline, if you're living in Japan, you will find yourself being targeted, I feel like. yeah.
It's the classic.
It's okay. You just have to be stronger in the Japanese, right?
True.
The interesting thing is, so generally speaking, right, even if the person in Japan, at least, like if you're dating a Japanese girl or Japanese guy, whatever, they're going to have some interest in English. Like, it's very... I have not really seen almost anyone who's had a Japanese girlfriend or boyfriend where the other person didn't at least have some interest in English, right? Because most people are too shy, at least outside of Tokyo, most people are too shy to even talk to an American, right? Let alone go out of their way to date them. So they're going to have some English, like interest in English, almost, I'd say 99.9% of the time. There might be like one or two people out there who happen to have a significant other who has zero interest in English and never did, but it's rare. So in the end, what happens is most people, even if they marry a Japanese woman or guy, that person speaks English. So they never speak Japanese anyway. And there's people who have lived here for 20, 30 years who I know personally who speak no Japanese, which is how do you live here for so long? But it's easy. They married a Japanese person who speaks good English, and so they don't speak Japanese. So what ends up happening is whoever is the most confident or whoever has the strongest, other language, what language you end up speaking. So you sort of have to go in and be not forceful, but like if you want to speak Japanese, you got to do it. And it's important. One thing I could give advice to people who have maybe just started dating someone or thinking about dating over here is it's a good idea to sort of communicate right away and be like, hey, I'm not dating you for this, but I would like to speak Japanese sometimes. So I'll speak some English with you too, but like sort of like work it out so that you get a little bit of both or whatever. Because if you don't, you'll just default to the easiest language.
Right. Yeah.
So for me, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I think that's probably a good way to put it, just to establish that right at the beginning before it becomes something later on where, like you mentioned.
It will. It does. Oh, it becomes something almost every time. It's like, I wanted to learn more English. Why don't you speak more English? It's like, I'm sorry, I would speak more English if you spoke more English, or the other way around. Like, you speak too much Japanese. Why don't, you know, it goes both ways in there.
Right.
So it will become an issue if you don't talk about it early.
Right. And real quick, guys, as a disclaimer, we're not telling you to go out there just to meet one random Japanese person on the street and start trying to date them just to increase your Japanese ability. That's not what we're trying to do here. This is not what the Kodakura podcast is trying to come
we're
here.
Not? Don't. That's not what we're I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
don't say that, Andy. We're going to have people going up to people and be like, oh, yeah, like the Kodakura podcast told me to do this.
Those type of people are going to do that anyway, so...
Oh, that's true. That's true. They'll just go in.
No, don't do that, guys. Do not do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Or at least if you do that, don't say it's because of us. Just do it on your own.
Blame it on Tokini Andy.
Exactly. No. We won't blame it on you. I'm just kidding. Blame it on... Who should we blame it on, Eric?
Who are we throwing under the bus?
Who are we throwing Dogen. Under the bus? It's all Dogen's fault. Yeah, we'll go message Dogen right now. But like, Dogen,
I love you, man.
You have to... we all love Dogen here. We all love Dogen here.
Of course.
Yeah. But it
I
is
I thought
about
Dogen when you brought that up, because I think he mentioned before that he and his wife speak in English most of the time.
Oh, really?
But then I didn't know that. He's still like super good at Japanese. Probably.
Oh, yeah.
All his videos are in Japanese.
Actually. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the opposite for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Similar. Yeah. I like I said, most of my life is in Japanese, but my videos are all in English. I'm literally the exact opposite of Dogen, maybe. That's interesting.
The reverse is reverse Dogen. Yeah.
Together we make one.
You got to have make a background like the opposite color of his
background.
Oh my
God, that'd be awesome. I should probably actually think of that. That'd be pretty funny. Just make parodies of Dogen, but all in English.
True. I mean, if you meet, it's going to be like the biggest crossover event. Like,
it'll be fun.
Two halves meeting for the first time. One of those
oh my God.
Long lost brothers finally meeting.
He's like twice as tall as me, I feel like, too. So that would be literally the opposite of each other. It's
oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. That's...
Yeah, I heard he is pretty tall.
Yeah. I'm not.
No, but the camera makes you look tall, you know. So that's
cameras are awesome.
Yeah. With camera, you're 6'5" at least.
Nobody needs to know.
Just stay in the camera.
Just don't show your legs on camera. You're good to go. Just like PewDiePie.
True. Yeah, I guess when you go and meet Dogen, you have to like FaceTime him or like have yourself on an iPad and then have someone else go meet Dogen. So they'll just be older than you.
I think having that difference on camera will add to the comedy. It'll be fun.
That's true.
People will be asking whether I'm kneeling or something and be like, no, that's just me.
No, you got to tell them that you are kneeling. You are kneeling.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm prostrating myself before Dogen.
In the presence of Dogen.
I'm too honored. I can't stand.
that you're going to title it that one day I spent the day kneeling across Japan with the Dogen.
My knees were red for a month.
But you got to meet Dogen, so all okay. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
One day.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has to kneel in the presence of Dogen. That's why he looks tall. He's actually like 5'7".
He's not that tall. He's like 5'4".
You're revealing a secret. he told that to us in confidence.
Yeah. Oh, no. Sure. We might have just let out a secret. I'm sorry, Dogen, but the secret's out now. The secret's out.
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. Well, we've come across some revelations here, so oh my god.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I guess I think another area that we always kind of find ourselves like seeing is, so we always hear about like burnout or things to that degree and how that kind of affects Japanese. And I mean, you mentioned how you go really hard at Japanese and you had time periods where you've been going really hard until you were in New Zealand and you had that time where you just didn't read or write for a year. I mean, not necessarily due to burnout or anything, I'm not sure, but would you say any of those have like any experiences of burnout has ever affected you across your...
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah?
Hell yeah. I burn out, like I said earlier in the podcast.
Right.
I tend to go really hard on whenever I become interested in anything. It doesn't matter what it is. Like if I find a new game I'm into, you know, I'm not going to sleep for a week. Well, not that bad, but like, I'll play it hard, right? If I get interested in a new instrument or something, I'll play it really hard for a couple months, and then I get bored with it, and I quit. Yuki, when I started YouTube at the very beginning, like I was like, I'm going to do YouTube, and I bought $1,000 in equipment, or like, I bought a camera, and I bought this. She's like, I didn't have that much money at the time, but I was like, I'm going to do it. And she's like, yeah, sure, of course you are. And she's like, in like 3 weeks, he'll be bored with this. And I kept going, luckily. But with Japanese, so what was really important for me, it was the first thing I ever really stuck out, because I do have a tendency to burn out on whatever I get interested in pretty quickly. So it was really important to me, or what was a big factor in me not burning out right away, was finding sort of a schedule and ways of studying that I enjoyed. So, like, if I hadn't enjoyed what I was doing, I would have quit way earlier, but I still burned out. Even with that schedule and finding things I enjoyed doing to study Japanese, after the 2 years, I burned out hard. But where I got lucky is that I just happened to start a new job where I got to speak Japanese all day, every day. So, like, there was definitely some luck involved, because I was burned out on studying Japanese at the end of that 2 years, because that's all I did. Like if I went out to have a few drinks with some friends, like all I was capable of talking about was studying Japanese, because that was like my whole life. And like, that's fine if the people you're hanging out with are also studying Japanese, because you can talk for hours about that. There's nothing wrong with that at all. But they weren't. So like, the people I was surrounded with, they weren't that interested in it, and that's all I was interested in. And it wore me down quite a bit. And I felt like I was becoming more boring every day. So, like, by the end of that 2 years, I got the new job. And I just was like, I can't do it anymore. And yeah, but I just happened to have to use Japanese every day, which luckily pushed me through a lot further. So I think I see a lot of people coming in to study Japanese. Like, I'll see people jumping onto my Discord and stuff. And they'll be like, I've got 12 hours a day free for the next couple months. I'm going to get N1 by the end, you know, in 6 months. I was like, good luck, guys. Like, that's a sure way to not get anywhere. Because it's important to sort of, at least for me, to like admit my limitations with that stuff. Because if I do anything for 12 hours a day, I'm going to be bored as you know what, within a couple, like at the most a couple months. And if you burn out, like, it's not like it was a waste, but like you could go so much further. The cliche is it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? For learning a language. Yeah. And it's a cliche for a reason. It's definitely true. Like, unless you really, really, really love what you're doing. Like, especially with the whole immersion thing coming out and the fact that that actually does work, which is amazing. Like, if you're really into the stuff you're immersing in, you're lucky. Because, I mean, that's awesome. You could literally just watch stuff and read stuff that you already love all day, every day, and get better. Like, yeah. Holy crap. If I had known about that, you know, 9 years ago, crap. But to be fair, this is interesting, and a lot of people might not know this, is I don't love Japanese media. I'm not, like, super into it. I didn't come to Japan because I was really interested in Japan. Like, I knew nothing about Japan when I came here. I've come to be interested in, like, some anime and stuff since I've learned Japanese. Before I started, like, I had zero interest. I'm not sure it would have worked for me just because, like, at the time, because I feel like I couldn't have stuck it out. Like, I wasn't interested enough in the content. So if you are into the content that is available to you in whatever language you're learning, I'm assuming Japanese if you're listening to this, man, you are the luckiest person on the planet because you can kill it. But if you're not, yeah, maybe you need to learn a different language.
Yeah,
I lived here, so that was a huge thing. Like, I just wanted to be able to talk to people. Yeah. I wanted to date here, things like that, right?
Right.
So that was my motivation. So, like, if you don't have an environment of or you're not super interested in the culture or the content, it can be pretty difficult to not burn out. And I see a lot of people who aren't really that interested. They're just, like, they have this inkling of what they think Japan is, and they're like, I want to go there someday, so I'm going to spend 12 hours a day studying. No, you're not. You're definitely not going to do that. You might for a week. But, yeah. So finding a schedule and stuff is really, really important for not burning out. And keeping in mind that you probably still will, so sort of having a backup plan.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's some really valuable advice to a lot of people, especially the Japanese learners who are kind of just getting into it while listening to this podcast, especially because you mentioned, like, we've seen it as well. A lot of people just kind of go dive head first and like, I'm going to go super hard. And then you see them.
We have interviewed those outliers, though, that go true. Super hard, and they just still are going like full speed.
Some people, man, are just machines. Yeah. Like, and once again, more power to those guys. I'm not. Some people are, man. Some people are. But they tend to know that they are. So, like those guys and girls, they know that they are into that they want to go those 12 hours a day and that they're going to enjoy it and stuff like that. And, like, they're not, they are, like you put it, the outliers, right? The average person who's never done something like that, they're not going to enjoy it. If you've never done something like that, chances are you're probably not going to enjoy it. But it doesn't mean don't try. Like, you can give it a shot. But there are other ways. Like, you don't have to do it that way. But if you can, great. I wish I could. I wish I could be interested in anything for that amount of time. But
the magic powers. But
no, for real.
Yeah. But I think with that, I think it's a good area to go towards the classic message at the end of our podcast, the Korekara message to the Korekara squad. I mean, you've already imparted a lot of wisdom here, Andy. You've imparted a lot of cool stories and experiences. But right here is your chance with the lights shining bright. It's usually the moment, the reason why everyone comes on the Korekara podcast to go get this one message out there. And Andy, I know you've been preparing a couple of years for this one moment. So I'm going to let you take it from
everything,
here.
Everything comes together at this exact moment.
Oh,
for your Korekara message.
Pressure is real. Wow. All right, guys. I need you to listen really closely. This is very important. Download Anki. End of message. No. No, but seriously. find a way to study. If you're actually interested in learning Japanese, find a way that you can actually look forward to doing every single day. But don't be afraid to take a weekend off, because that's important too. And find something that where you do it, when you do it every day, if you don't do it one day, you find yourself feeling guilty. Like, and you're not going to feel guilty about not doing something you hate to do. So find something you really enjoy and then do it every day. Like, that's what it's going to come down to. And when you start finding yourself getting bored of it, don't feel terrible about yourself or give up. Just find a new way to do it. Because there's like a million resources out there now. We live in the most amazing time in the history of the earth for learning languages. Like, there has never been so many resources out there to learn anything, not just languages. Like, it's insane. So take advantage of everything. Netflix, YouTube, courses, whatever. It doesn't matter. Anything. Check it out. Find things you enjoy and just keep pushing through, because you can get amazing at Japanese. And hopefully the country will let you in one of these days. So when that happens, get over here.
If you are amazing at Japanese.
if there is a test at the border, that's gonna be the new test to get in.
Oh, you heard it here first, guys. You heard. Make sure you're studying up. Make sure you download Anki, and make sure you're able to get in through the borders.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're not gonna let you in unless you have Anki and perfect Japanese. So.
yeah we're rooting for you guys. We'll see you on the other side of the border.
And watch every episode of Kore Kara podcast as well. That's also very important. They check that.
How yeah. I mean,
that's a
you,
that's
Andy,
a given for, that's a given. I didn't even think we need to mention that.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realize that was
of course
common knowledge.
You're
already
gonna get rejected at the border if you don't have that.
You gotta have the red line to the end and underneath every single YouTube video.
Yeah. true yeah. They go CS your passport now. Oh, you've watched every single video of the Kore Kara podcast. Oh, welcome to Japan. Here's your stamp. You're good
to go. You're in.
Oh, man.
Here's a free girlfriend. No, I'm not even just kidding.
Hey, that's what happens when you watch every Tokini Andy video. It's a magic combination. If you want to get into Japan and get a Japanese girlfriend,
or boyfriend.
The bundle.
Our boyfriend, you're
every
right.
Every single Tokini Andy episode.
Exactly. You heard just it kidding, first, I can't. Guys.
there's definitely a footnote in there that says this is a joke somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. This is a joke. Not the part about the Kore Kara watching every Kore Kara episode.
That was 100% true.
That one's real.
Yeah, that one's real. But this one
disclaimers
right here,
and all the Tokini Andy stuff.
That one is a joke. That one's a joke. Heavy disclaimers. But yeah, with that, Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. It's been super fun having this conversation.
Oh, I had a great time. Thank you so much. I hope we can do it again one of these days. Thanks.